Good afternoon, listeners. This is MLB Talk. I'm Chase. I'm here with Andrew and Nadia. For those of you who would like to call in, the phone number is 310-794-9348. I guess getting started, what we'll talk about first today is Boston Red Sox signing with Yoan Moncada. And for those of you who don't know, this was the big Cuban signing. Very heralded prospect. Baseball America has even said that he will be automatically the top 10 prospect in baseball and the number one prospect in the Red Sox system. The signing was not for a lot of money, $31.5 million. They haven't announced the years yet with an 100% tax, bringing the total signing to $63 million. So what do you guys think of this signing, and how does it elevate the Red Sox in terms of the American League?
Well, just for clarification, the length of the contract is undefined because he's under team control as a prospect. So the Red Sox are going to have 6 to 7 years of control, depending on how Super 2 stuff works like that and all. You know, I was really surprised how this ended up, not because it went to the Red Sox, but just because of everyone's expectations, which clearly were overhyped, overinflated. You know, I think everyone was expecting this to Moncada to the total cost to be closer to $80 to $100 million, and to see it below that is shocking and probably disappointing for some of the teams who are sort of near the race.
Speaking of teams who are also in the race, that brings about why the Yankees were all of what, $6.5 million underbid from the Red Sox, which to me, and I'm sure Chase agrees with this, coming from a team who really actually probably could have used them or used Moncada more so than any other team, probably in the bidding wars, correct?
Yeah, I'll definitely say that the Yankees could have used this guy. To me, the most frustrating thing is I'm all for the Yankees saving money like Hal Steinbrenner has tried to do the past couple years, but in terms of the actual contract, they're only paying this guy $32 million. They would only be paying him about $32 million.
Well, multiply that by two. The dollar-for-dollar tax that goes on for these signings when you exceed that, what, international signing?
Yeah, there's several penalties. For starters, the Red Sox aren't going to be able to sign international free agents above $300,000 for the next 2 years. And in addition to that, you know, the thing that's sort of hard to understand is, like, Moncada isn't MLB ready. He's going to need a year or two in the system. Maybe, I mean, who knows? He could show up to spring training and just be a boss and make it on the team. But considering the fact that the Boston infield is pretty full and the outfield is somewhat cluttered, it doesn't seem too likely. And I think the other thing that's, you know, hard for front office or ownership to deal with is the amount of money you're putting up for future potential, not even into 2015. I mean, maybe as late as like 2017. Yeah. So it's definitely a different like cost evaluation.
And the one thing that you just touched on, which is what I think is the most interesting part of the signing, is there really isn't a spot for him in the Red Sox lineup right now. They just signed Pablo Sandoval to play third base to a 5-year contract. Xander Bogaerts is, as you said him last week, the X factor. You know, this is the guy who they expect to be their shortstop of the future. Pedroia is the face of the franchise. He's not going anywhere. So at what point are you going to make a decision if you're the Red Sox that you're either going to move Moncada or maybe move Pablo Sandoval to first, as his weight kind of fluctuates in and out of year? And, I mean, this is also a team. They have, I think, 7 or 8 big league outfielders right now where someone's going to get traded. Even I heard Mookie Betts, who's one of the top prospects in baseball, there's even rumors he's going to be sent down. So at what point do you think they integrate him into the lineup and where?
Well, for me, this guy is still 19 years old. So when you're talking about integrating a guy into the lineup, considering the Red Sox's extraneous circumstances with having, you know, too many players for only X amount of positions, for me, that's not a huge concern to me because this guy is still 19 years old. And really, the only time I could think of where maybe this guy goes into spring training and, you know, as Andrew said, hits it out of the park and you know that you want to give him a spot on the team, really, to me, that only makes sense if you're a team like the Yankees where that position is actually so void. So for me, I'm not too concerned with this signing for the Red Sox as maybe not having as an immediate impact, which no player that you're going to sign at this age really should be thought of as having an immediate impact, even if you have all this hype backing you. Because even if you have the skills, the experience really is important in really acclimating yourself, not only to an entire different nation, but to Major League Baseball.
Yeah, or even, I was going to say, even just minor league pitching. I mean, one of the biggest things about Moncada that is concerning is, I mean, no one actually knows what his plate discipline is like. And that's definitely caused some people to think, you know, he might be closer to a Neil Walker-type player than a superstar. That's a pretty significant difference. So there's definitely some caution. I don't know. I guess in that sense, it's kind of a good fit because he doesn't have to fill a hole now. I feel like they maybe see him as the replacement to Pedroia in the near future. I mean, I don't know what his contract is like, but he's definitely getting up there in age, and you know, he's seen some decline. And you know, in addition, I think one of the things that is really interesting to me is the Red Sox really seem to have a strong preference for Latin American players. Well, and you have to wonder if that's going to help or not, maybe not hurt, but, you know, how it might affect the team in the future.
Well, is it so much so that they have a preference for these kinds of players, or because of the existing kinds of players, more of those players are attracted to go there? Because that's what it kind of seemed like for me, at least looking at Pablo Hanley and Big Poppy.
Right. So I was just thinking, though, before this year, it was just Big Poppy. I mean, yes, Xander Bogaerts, but I don't think Major League players see him as, like, a big attraction, so to speak. And in addition to that, you know, Luis Tiant apparently helped sign Moncada, so there's definitely a strong factor there. And I think the front office's decision to bring in Hanley, to bring in Pablo, is kind of a sign that, at least to me, that's the direction they want to go moving forward.
Yeah, and I definitely think, just to echo what you guys have said, you definitely want to be somewhere where there's a comfort level. And I think when you look at this New York Yankee team now, because the Yankees were said to be the main competition other than the Red Sox, and the Yankees don't really have that strong Latino presence anymore. Cano's gone. Carlos Beltran, but even he, you know, a Puerto Rican player and a Cuban player go through two totally different circumstances in terms of growing up and even reaching the big leagues in general. And I think the Red Sox, like you said, they had Luis Tiant, a Red Sox legend, recruit him. They have Castillo in center field, another guy who very recently made the jump from Cuba and who could definitely help mentor him along the way. So I think when it came down to it, it wasn't necessarily dollars, but it was more where he felt he would have the greatest chance to succeed. And moving along to our next topic, so Rob Manfred, for those of you who don't know, is the new commissioner of baseball. And one of, amongst many things, one change he says that he would possibly discuss would be shortening the baseball season to 154 games, which pre-1961, that's how it always was. If anything, the 154 game change to 162 ruined what was one of the great home run chases between Maris and Mantle in 61. So my question for you guys is, one, do you think that it's necessary to change it to 154 games because it really only is 8 less games? And two, if the change does occur, do you think there will be any benefit for the game of baseball?
In my head, you keep it the same exactly because of those end of the season races, for those races, and to, you know, compare it against previous seasons, because you say the change happened then. If you change it again, then you have trouble. I know you say it's only 8 games, but really, 8 games definitely can make a difference in those total season stats. That's why I keep it the same. I also don't understand. I like keeping it the way it is. I really don't see why you need to shorten it. Maybe they, you know, they're trying to get the game to go a little faster. Maybe they think if they shave it down by 8 games, it'll make up for the cost elsewhere, I guess. But
yeah, exactly. I hate this idea. I'm going to be honest. I think it's just terrible. You know, there's no value for resting. One of the things that was mentioned in relation to this was only fewer than 9% of players last year played more than 150 games. I mean, therefore, you know, reducing it by 8 is not going to change anything. It's going to reduce revenue by a somewhat significant amount, and it's going to mess with total season statistics. I think it just doesn't, you know, if it actually made a difference in players playing more games or staying healthy, I'd be all for it, but it doesn't really do anything like that, and it's negative on revenue. And one of the most appealing things about baseball, at least for me, is, you know, like nearly every single day there's a game for your team, and that's like, it's awesome. You know, it's, you don't have to like stick on a loss for too long. And so I just wouldn't want to cut it.
Well, then maybe that's where I kind of see where Manfred's coming from, because for non-baseball fans, what's a huge complaint for them? Not only long games, but also long seasons. So when you say keeping up every, I'm like, I totally agree with you. I'm just trying to understand the other side, but maybe that's why.
I think Manfred is adopting his policy of, we'll just throw stuff out here and see what sticks. And I don't know why he has to do it publicly. I think as he matures as a commissioner and becomes more of a Manfred, he's going to figure out how to navigate this a little more intelligently. I just don't think it's like smart to just say what, oh yeah, we might change this if it means something else will change. And it's like, no, you should actually study it, and then if it's worth announcing, then you bring it up.
Yeah, and I think part of that is also because, you know, think what you want about Bud Selig. I know personal opinions definitely vary, but there are a lot of people who think that he was not good to the game of baseball. When you think of, there's a strike under his watch, you know, he tried to fix the steroid era towards the end, but at the end of the day, the steroid era still happened pretty much entirely under his tenure. And I think what he's doing here is just suggesting all these rules and changes that could be made to say, hey, I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to try to improve the game the best way possible. You know, what do you guys think? And another rule change that was enacted recently was the changes to baseball's timing rules. And basically the rules, without getting too specific, are that a batter must always have one foot in the box, and then it really emphasizes pitchers hurrying up, where there'll be, I believe it's a 2.5 minute clock from the time that commercial starts. And then pitchers have 30 seconds left before the break. They'll have to have thrown their final warm-up pitch. The music for the players batting stops at 25 seconds. And then within that 20 seconds, play is going to start. So it's kind of like very convoluted, confusing rules. Even just reading them to you right now off my sheet, it doesn't really make that much sense to me. So do you think this is really going to make that much of a difference? Because honestly, baseball games are going to be pushing 3 hours no matter what. This is going to solve maybe, you know, shaving a couple minutes off a game, if that. Do you think these changes are necessary? And then how do you think players will react? Because I know, like, Derek Jeter, who just retired, he was Mr. Step out of the box and milk at bats. So do you think there's any superstars in baseball that will be either a pitcher or a hitter that will be very outspoken against these rules?
Well, for me, what you're going to be saving in X amount of minutes off your game, you're going to be gaining in what? Maybe having to hire someone to sit there at a timer and think about all of these things while it's happening, and whoever's in the box or whoever's at the mound is going to be having to think about these things and what that person's supposed to. I think that's just so convoluted, I think was the word you use, and I think it's a great way to say it. That, like I said, what you're trying to shave in minutes, you just add in confusion.
Right. So I think The way I understood this rule, because, I mean, it's accompanied by a couple others, is not for it to be, I mean, they did lay it out technically, so that way you can say, okay, this is the step-by-step process, but the gist of it is supposed to be, when the commercial's over, the game starts again. Not, oh, the commercial's over, here's an extra minute and a half before they start. So I think that one is the most minor of them. The other two were managers are going to challenge from the dugout, which I love, because that definitely makes a difference. If, you know, I would imagine not how many times a manager challenges, but a manager goes out to challenge last year was at least once per team per game. So we're talking two times. And I mean, you know, like I always remember Bochy with his catcher legs sort of stumbling up out there and like, so like, I'm going to like hold you here because I have your respect. And then he gets like, you know, the thumbs down or whatever, meaning he shouldn't challenge, and he takes his time walking back. So I think that is a lot better. And then, most importantly, there's the batter can't step out rule. That one I love very much. And it's simply because if you actually look at the amount of time batters spend in total wandering outside the box, it's like 30 minutes a game. Seriously. Yeah, they recorded it once over the summer. It was a Pirates-Reds game, I think. And so that is just absurd. So I'm really happy that they're sticking with that. As far as penalty goes, I think if you do it, You could step out of the box if it's a foul ball, pass ball, wild pitch, or if it's called for some other call for time. So I think the idea is if you do it and none of those conditions have been met, it's just like another strike on the batter. And I'm fine with that. I think it's going to have a profound impact on certain hitters, and that kind of sucks, but it's the easiest change the game can make to speed up the game, and I'm totally okay with that one.
To me, I see the point of these rules, but part of the reason that I've always loved baseball so much, going back from when I'm a little kid to now, is there is no shot clock, there is no time. It's just the game is played, and I think that's part of the beauty of baseball is that it's unique in that. And I see why these rules are necessary. It's, you know, so the casual fan will come, they'll listen, they'll come out to the park more. It's just, to me, I think we could be going down a very slippery slope where changes are being made in baseball just for the sake of revenue, just for the sake of attracting more fans, where to some degree the purity of the game itself, you know, might be impacted. And I don't think that's the intention here, per se, but I think that down the road there could be some policies that we might definitely look at and say, hey, let's take a second before we do this.
Well, I think everyone's afraid of the pitch clock because it's being tested, but the pitch clock isn't going to happen. I just don't see it. For starters, I mean, there's like pretty much no pitchers if they decide to go with the 20-second clock. There's pretty much no pitchers who pitch at a lower than 20 seconds per pitch pace. So that one's practically unenforceable. And, you know, as far as these go, I mean, to be honest, I love this. Like, one of my biggest complaints about baseball is that it can, like, it can totally drag on. And I'm fine with shaving a certain amount of minutes off for just better pacing, you know? This one, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a thin line that you have to sort of tightrope across. But right now, it seems like they're doing it the right way.
But, I mean, when you talk about Derek Jeter stepping out of the box, that's just part of the game to me. And, you know, part of the games you can play with your pitcher or, you know, whoever you're pitching against. I mean, I didn't know that 30 minutes total on average gets spent on batter stepping out of the box.
Well, that's not on average. It was just from one recorded instance. Uh-oh. But I think the idea is that, you know, the fact that it's around that kind of significance, it's usually going to be in a really huge range. I mean, the other thing, too, is, like, if you have 1 foot in the box, you can still sort of stand outside of it and, you know, do all that same stuff. You know, if you like to have a little tour around sort of that whole area, I'm sorry, it's just silly. Like, you can psychologically prepare yourself in less time than that. So, I mean, I'm sure people will complain. I don't have any doubt some players are going to be against it, you know. You guys mentioned Derek Jeter, Garcia Parra is another classic who loves to do that. But, I mean, on the other side, at least you get to keep some of the cool stuff. Like, Pablo Sandoval still gets to do that thing with his bat and the helmet before he bats. I mean, like, it definitely is retaining some of the aesthetics.
Yeah, I'll agree. And one topic I want to touch on again that we talked on before. Yesterday on ESPN, for any of you who watched, Yoan Moncada signing should have been the number one baseball headline without question. This is a guy who has been the most hyped, maybe Cuban or international prospect ever. But yet, when I turn on ESPN, the breaking news is Alex Rodriguez showing up to camp, not even interviewing, but just taking BP. So, as we could clearly see, and we've talked about it the past few weeks, different aspects of it, the New York media and the baseball media at large, no matter what, they're going to blow up the A-Rod story. So, at what point do you think enough is enough with A-Rod? And at what point do you guys think the Yankees just say, you know, screw it, you know, we'd rather give a young guy, you know, this bench shot. We're just going to eat the money and let somebody else deal with this problem?
For me, it's so funny because you talk about the New York media storm. And for all the Derek Jeter stuff last year, I was not sick of it once. Not once. And I know for people who maybe are not New York Yankee fans, they didn't, even if you respect Derek Jeter, when you have to hear about Derek Jeter's gift he got from this team and so and so and that, I'm sure you're going to get sick of it. But as a New York fan, I ate it up. I loved it. Now, the New York media is feeding on something that I actually hate and that everyone listening to it hates. It's almost like they're feeding into this, like, vicious, unwanted cycle that's only making me more angry as I listen to it. So I am sick of it. I'm so sick of it.
Well, I think as journalists, I mean, the one thing you really want to do as a sports journalist is try to evoke some kind of emotion from your reader. And anger is just as good as happiness or appreciation or something like that. So I get it from their perspective. You know, as far as it goes with things for the Yankees, I mean, if I was Brian Cashman, I would just, even if there is future production, I would highly consider just cutting him, because this is just, it's getting in the way of everything. I mean, for crying out loud, you know, people in the Yankees front office or someone or other, they have issues with him showing up early because he didn't let them know. And it basically says A-Rod, you know, A-Rod's still going to do what A-Rod wants. And so, like, if that's the case, you know, how there's no way of controlling him, of controlling the media cycle, of trying to keep the focus on the team. I mean, it's already a freak show. And the fact that the team is probably not going to be that good this year is, it's totally, totally problematic.
Yeah, and I think the best example would be, just for a very practical reason of releasing A-Rod, you know, you look at the Yankees bench this year. They're going to go into camp with a backup catcher, most likely J.R. Murphy. Chris Young's probably the fourth outfielder. And then, say, Brendan Ryan. And then, say, Garrett Jones is the opening day DH, just for the sake of an argument. If the Yankees want to carry 8 relief pitchers, which isn't, you know, so far-fetched so you can have a couple swingmen, that would be 13 total pitchers. And then with those 3 guys on the bench, it's almost getting to the point where, unless A-Rod has a standout spring, it's not even so much of getting rid of A-Rod. It's just there's no spot for you on this team.
Well, I think they're going to go with 7 relievers, though, because they have such a strong back end. I personally think having more relief pitchers in the way baseball is currently set up. By the way, this is something else that should change, because loogies are just, it's not good for the game. But anyways, with the way things are set up for them, and the fact that they're in a more offense run division, they should definitely run with more guys on the bench than opposed to relievers. So but he definitely takes up a spot. I mean, right now the roster formation for the Yankees is definitely not exactly pretty. I mean, I do think, though, Didi Gregorius is going to be a vast improvement over Brendan Ryan. Or, I mean, I guess they'll platoon, but I don't really think they should. So, yeah, it's kind of tricky imagining where A-Rod could be, but I definitely, honestly, as a bench player, if everything else, if you could just forget about everything else, I don't think that would actually be that terrible. I mean, you got a power option who hasn't played in a year and is probably, you know, probably regained some ability to hit fastballs. But, you know, when you consider the fact that, you know, it's a fat, ugly contract, he's taking up a spot that younger players might need, and, you know, he creates just nonsense all around him, it's kind of hard.
But I think I've mentioned this before. It's like the moment that I'm cringing happens is that A-Rod actually does really well, to the point where maybe he is, you know, an everyday DH and, you know, really is contributing and not choking. Like I said, this is a far-fetched fantasy. But imagine this happening and you realizing that you may actually kind of have to, like, root for A-Rod. Isn't that, like, a weird thing to think about?
Yeah, and as a Yankee fan just like yourself, you know, we'll talk all the trash we want about A-Rod right now, but at the end of the day, if the guy produces, we're going to support him. The same thing happened in 2009, his first game back. He hits a home run against Baltimore. That postseason against the Phillies, as bad as A-Rod has been against every other postseason, A-Rod probably wins us that World Series and, you know, carried us throughout that postseason.
Other than Hideki Matsui, thank you very much.
Oh, well, Matsui sealed it, but A-Rod got us there.
No, I totally agree.
And, you know, I think that is a worst-case scenario. It's at what point do we decide that, all right, you know, we're stuck with this guy, we're going to support him again.
I know, where do we compromise our morals about all the terrible things that we've done and realize that he's doing well for our team and have to root for him?
It's one of, like, the more quintessential problems about sports and definitely baseball in particular, because there's such a history of, like, cheaters and stuff. I mean, you know, if I was in your guys' position and A-Rod is doing well, I'd just be like, whatever, great, like, good. It's better than hearing, oh, like, A-Rod complains or something went bad in the locker room, or he decided to, like, go shopping on eBay during the game in the dugout. Like, you know, I think, like, that's absolutely one of the better scenarios. Like, you have to put up with him, so you might as well hope that, you know, things go well and that it's all positive. Like,
but he's been so fun for me to hate for so long, is it not? You know? And as much as we hate hearing it, it's always fun to talk crap about him. So, it's obviously a little twisted, but...
I think that's so interesting. I don't think it's, for me personally, it's not fun to hate him because I just know he's just terrible. Like, he's, you know, threatened people, bribed people, like, lied about doing drugs, like, just all, it's just so many things. And it's like, obviously he doesn't really care about, like, listening to, like, higher authorities or doing things for people other than himself. So it's like, he's terrible. Like, if he has to be around, he might as well, like, be doing something else interesting.
At the end of the day, though, we could be talking poorly about him right now, but A-Rod loves this crap. It doesn't matter if it's good or bad. This is a guy who he loves to be in the limelight. And, you know, that's seen by the fact that he was one of the best young players in baseball and still felt the need to take steroids to, you know, just be that much better in the people's eyes. So I think it'll be interesting to see how the A-Rod saga will play out. And then while we're on Yankees and the New York media, the last thing I want to touch on before break is CeCe Sabathia just showed up to Yankees camp. You know, CeCe, I've been calling him the big man since he's been with the Yankees, but he showed up at an NFL lineman size, 305 yeah. pounds. He said that part of the reason why is that he was so ineffective last year is because over the course of the year, he came to camp slimmer, and then as he lost weight as the season progressed, he just wasn't up to the strength that he needs. Do you think that a 305-pound CeCe is better for the Yankees, given the fact that this is a guy who hasn't really been the same since about the 2012 season and is also coming off two off seasons in a row of surgery?
Yeah, so I am a little perplexed. So, I mean, did he ever come close to weighing this before? That's what I'm so confused about. Like, wasn't he more like 260, 270, like tops?
I'd even peg him at like a 280, but...
Okay.
I mean, 305 is like...
Well, so, when you said it the way... When you explain it sort of in the way that he's going to lose weight throughout the season, which I guess makes sense, it's actually not a terrible, in my opinion, not a terrible strategy. I think about, like, some of the players. Like, I always remember Tim Lincecum sort of messing with his off-season weight. And the first year he did really bad was the year he dropped, like, 25 pounds over the off-season. And so I definitely think for pitchers it is important to have a lot of weight behind you. I think 305 is definitely too much. And... you have to wonder about his ability to move and if it's going to create a higher chance for injury. But if he slims down during the season, even just by 20, I mean, it might work out. Why would you want to weigh that much? That's like what gets me.
It's because the pinstripes are very slimming, but right, I just don't know to what extent.
I read somewhere that was like, CeCe Sabathia has most pinstripes on his jersey than any other Yankee to ever play the game. No, but for me, I think his weight would, you know, factor in more for me if we're talking about him maybe in his like 20s, but he's getting up there. He is getting older. I really don't know how much of this we can continue to blame on his weight. So that's just my personal
opinion.
The other
thing too is like if Bartolo Colon can do it, can't he? Right? Like...
Well, I think even with the weight, like, I think the weight is one thing, but it's just like what you said with Bartolo Colon. Bartolo Colon, you know, even when he was in shape and in his prime, for Bartolo Colon, it was all about location. You know, cutters, two seams to the corners. I don't even think he throws off-speed pitches, to be honest.
He straight up doesn't.
Whereas, you know, CeCe got through his whole career and dominated as a power pitcher with a wipeout slider. And now, you know, even pre-surgery, he was, you know, 91-92 guy just because of old age. And, you know, you've seen guys, like, for me, the best example, like Andy Pettit. He was able to make the transition great late into his career as somebody who was very much able to adjust with his stuff. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, a combination of, you know, is the weight going to hold him back? Will the stuff hold up? And, you know, ultimately, will he be able to contribute for the Yankees this season?
You know, I think there's always so much emphasis on fastball velocity, and I think it's probably a little misplaced overall just because there's a threshold where it actually becomes a difference, but as long as you don't reach that, and, you know, that's closer to, like, 90 miles an hour. So... You know, his slider's always been great. I think his curveball has sort of been underrated as a complement to that, to keep people wary. I think those are going to be super important for him. And, you know, yeah, one of the things about Pettit, though, is he was like a finesse pitcher. And a lot of the guys who make that transition are have a little more finesse than Sabathia has had. So, I mean, maybe he can make that adjustment, but this late in his career would be especially hard. I mean, the people who do that now, like, a lot of the pitchers who've had to make that transition definitely fail, and a lot of them have to start earlier than that because that's when they lose velocity. So, he's a huge question mark. You really don't know what's going to come out.
Exactly. I mean, I hope that CC can have some sort of impact on our rotation, but I'm not going to count on it. I think that's what it comes down to for me.
Yep, I'll agree with that. And on that note, halfway through the hour, we are going to take a quick music break. Coming back in the second half, we will be previewing the baseball season and giving you some awards predictions. All right, welcome back. This is the second half of our MLB talk show. Andrew is going to give you a quick plug from our podcast to get us started.
Yeah, so if you want to listen to the show on your own free time, recommend it to a friend who's busy doing other stuff, you can check us out at UCLAMLBTalk.podomatic.com. That's UCLAMLBTalk.podomatic.com.
Before we get to our weekly tweet of the week, I figured I would give that song a shout out. That was 45 by the Gaslight Anthem. They're my favorite band, so I'm a little disappointed that I forgot to mention them just now. But moving along, so every week we have a featured tweet of the week, just goofy baseball tweets. So mine tweet revolves around B.J. Upton and his sudden name change to Melvin. And the tweet comes from sports writer Joel Sherman, and it was, instead of Melvin, I think B.J. Upton should have changed his name to Fausto Carmona, who, for those of you who don't remember, had a bit of a name problem a few years ago himself.
Yeah, definitely. I can't say I feel bad for B.J. Upton. Also, I mean, I was hoping when I saw this, because it just said, oh, like, he's going to change his name, I was like, oh, he's finally going to just call himself Boss Man. Yes. But no. Went for Melvin. Why?
All right, I'll go with mine. So this is one of my favorites, at Fake Dan Ugla.
Nice.
It's just so, well, I guess not self-deprecating, fake self-deprecating. Anyways, this one says, I like being a Washington National because when they eventually release me, I can just wear the uniform to my part-time job at Walgreens.
Why do we have to make fun of Dan Ugla? The guy's got enough problems.
I mean, okay, well, but I won't get into
that's a discussion for another day.
Yeah, I mean, considering he played for my team and it was just awful, it's just, no. Okay, so mine's from at Hank Shulman, one of the Giants beat writers. This is a two-parter. So this is in relation to Bruce Bochy being hospitalized earlier last week. So just texted Bochy, said he'll be out a couple days. He was joking today about a story that ranked him 29th handsomest manager of 30. I joked via text that he must have taken it hard to end up in the hospital. He texted back, broke my heart when I got that news. Great, great humor from a guy who I think Giants fans definitely appreciate so much, and glad to see that he's doing okay.
Yeah, for sure. All right, before we get to our spring training preview segment, one thing we were talking about before that I think we should definitely touch on is Greg Zahn, who was a former catcher in the big leagues. He played for around 15 years, Blue Jays, Orioles, kind of a journeyman catcher who had a very solid career, you know, nothing outstanding. He recently, you know, came out with allegations that were very likely true that when he played for the Orioles as a rookie, a group led by Cal Ripken Jr., Brady Anderson, amongst others, basically just hazed the crap out of him, you know, tied him down the tables, you know, put ice down his pants, like kind of ridiculous, you know, being in a fraternity now, especially at college, fratty stuff. And then he also went on to say, you know, echoing Kirk Gibson and the Diamondbacks' view of true grit, that he thinks players in baseball now should be hazed so that they know their place, especially as youngsters. Do you guys think that there's any room for this in baseball? And, you know, do you think, if anything, that this will affect Ripken's reputation as one of baseball's good guys?
Well, there's room for it, so to speak. I mean, there's time, but I these people are adults, and it's just totally unnecessary. Not a fan of it in the fraternity sense either. So I think it's just not grown up at all. Oh my gosh, I wonder who that could be. So
I'll handle that
because that's not the on air one. But you guys keep discussing.
Is this going to be the infamous Taser?
Yes, say it. Probably. Odds are it's Taser Bill. So
you're good. Monica's got Taser Bill outside.
Okay.
Taser Bill, the first time I talked to him, I'm going to be honest, like, he had some interesting stuff to say. I just think, you know, he's a little over the deep end. But I appreciate his persistence. It's more than I could say about a lot of athletes that I like.
I have not seen that light flash. Like, I almost forgot what it was for a second in a very long time.
I was a little panicked, I'll be honest.
Well, it's just the weird thing is, like, we don't list that number. It's like, we don't really throw it out there. How you get that, and why stick with that one when everyone always mentions our on-air number? I think it's just, it's very
part of
amazing.
His mind games.
Yeah. All right. So, segueing from hazing, I guess Taser Bill got us a little distracted there.
At least they didn't haze him with tasers.
I was waiting for something
go.
Along those lines.
As far as we know, maybe that's why he's all about taser rights.
Did we ever find out what that call was about? No?
We'll find out later.
All right, so moving along, with spring training comes a lot of Vegas predictions, Sports Illustrated predictions, fantasy predictions, all of this good stuff. So today what we're going to do is give you our predictions for the American League and National League, the World Series winners, as well as Nadia's kind of giving me a face like maybe I should have talked about this more with you guys.
No, it's fine.
And then some MVP and Cy Young winners. So I guess I'll get us started. AL or NL, which one? I'll let you pick.
American League.
All right, we'll go American League MVP first. For me, I'm going with not really a slightly unconventional pick, but a guy I think who slid under the radar for a guy who signed a $240 million contract. I think Robinson Cano is going to win the MVP this year. I think the power numbers will go not up to what they were in pinstripes, but I think back into the 20 homer range. And I just think, you know, everybody loves a narrative of, oh, this guy led the team back to the playoffs. This guy, you know, led them this far. And I think this is the year Seattle makes the jump. I think between Cano, Seager, and if he stays healthy, Nelson Cruz, they have a very potent 3-4-5. And I think this is the year that the Mariners get in and Cano's awarded with the MVP for it.
Okay.
I don't think I agree with you on that one, but we'll have our bold predictions and we can follow up with them. Come this time next year or whenever the awards, whatever. Just ignore me. Andrew, go ahead. Use your prediction.
Oh, no. You go first, please.
All right. Well, then I'll just pick the most basic. Am I allowed to say basic bitch on air? All right. I'll pick the most basic girl on
you
the pick.
Say.
And I'll say Mike Trout. And I wish everyone could see my hand go up like the emoji.
Okay. So I'm a little bit racked with indecision because I haven't had time to think about all the players in all of the American League. So, you want to what? I'm just going to do something totally crazy. I'm going to pick a different Seattle player, Felix Hernandez. I think this is going to be a big year for the Mariners. And, you know, in the recent past, some pitchers have won MVP, so there's a better chance of it happening. And, you know, he's fantastic. He's got that, you know, badass 90-mile-an-hour changeup. So I really love his pitching style, and he's only getting better. So you can put me down.
All right. That can't go wrong with that prediction. So see your prediction for the AL Cy Young as well, which we'll do next?
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty much a given. That's the only way he has a chance of winning the MVP is if he's definitely going to be the best pitcher in the AL. So
this is true. For my AL Cy Young pick, it's a guy who has won it, I want to say within the past 5 years. The Detroit Tigers definitely have a much depleted rotation with Verlander, you know, kind of dropping off a cliff a little bit. Annabelle Sanchez, you never know when he's healthy. And Scherzer leaving, obviously. So for me, I think the guy who is going to win AL Cy Young is David Price. I think he carries this Tigers rotation into the playoffs with his, you know, sort of typical David Price numbers. And I think, you know, it's either him or Felix to me. That I think it's going to go to one of, like, the studs of the American League.
So, but if I have to choose between those two, then I still choose Felix.
Yeah.
King Felix, to be exact.
The guy's got a crown. What more does he need?
Literally nothing besides another Cy Young Award.
All right. Fair enough. NL MVP. this, I think, is definitely the most interesting one because there's just a lot of great young National League talent that you can pick from. For me, I think the Marlins make the jump this year. I think if Stanton had stayed healthy throughout all of last year, there's definitely a chance he wins the MVP. I think this year, they're kind of like on the hover of being a wild card team. I think for them, the big X factor will be, when Jose Fernandez comes back, is he the ace that he once was? Because this is a team they went out and got Matt Latos, who's like kind of like a 1B, high-end two-starter guy if he stays healthy. So I think Stanton comes in, he leads the NL in home runs of RBIs. Marlins finish over 500. He's taking home the MVP.
Okay, well, I hate to be boring because I was going to take Stanton too. He's really developed his approach at the plate. He's a lot more disciplined than sort of at the beginning of his career. And I just think he's really putting it all together. I think this might be the year that we see him bat 300 in addition to his usual shtick. So he's going to be a force to be reckoned with.
My NL MVP. Well, if we're going along with basic bitch predictions, I am going to pick for the second year in a row, Clayton Kershaw. And to piss Andrew off.
Don't you think it's going to be so hard for him to, in addition to replicating sort of mind-blowing numbers, that no hitter is going to have sort of a crazy season that the voters feel like surpasses what he did on the mound, considering the fact that sort of that's what the Cy Young Award is for?
I just think eventually also, and you see it with LeBron James in basketball, the one year Derrick Rose won the MVP, to some extent the voters just get, they get tired of
electing the same guy. They're looking for a chance to
every year
pick someone else.
And truthfully, Kershaw should have won four in a row. You look at the year R.A. Dickey had when he won. Kershaw's numbers, wins notwithstanding, were better across the board. It was just, Dickey's the knuckleballer, came from a tough past. It was a great feel-good story. And even at the time, I said, R.A. Dickey should be the Cy Young. But Kershaw, he's the best in baseball. However, I'm not going to pick him to win the Cy Young.
Whoa.
This will probably be the most unconventional choice that we have here, I would think at least. For my NL Cy Young, I'm going with a guy who is probably the fourth best pitcher on his own team. I'm going Doug Fister to win the Cy Young.
Oh, my gosh.
This is a guy. This, to me, he's just the most low-key, under-the-radar stud in baseball. He missed the first month or so of the season this year and won 16 games. It's just since this guy got traded over to Detroit from Seattle, he wins.
Don't you think, though, that his strikeouts are just totally lacking for the Cy Young Award? I mean, that's used to not matter as much, but now it's sort of replaced wins as the separator between two otherwise like equal candidates.
Yeah, I just, maybe his whip helps him out with the sabermetric community.
Okay.
I'm not really sure, but I just have
maybe if he gets like a 0.7 whip, then I'll think about it.
I just have a good feeling about Doug Fister.
Okay. I mean, I think he'll have a good year too. I'm actually going to pick a different national. I'm going to take Max Scherzer, already completely dominant, very comfortable with his own pitching style. Never really had significant injury history, and he's going to get a big boost from getting to face a pitcher one, two, maybe three times a game. So I really like Scherzer, and he's also in a pretty weak division.
Well, then if I'm not going to pick Clayton Kershaw again for the same exact thing, then maybe I'll just toss your friend Mad Bum a little bone for this
really?
One.
I was about to say, how did we forget this guy?
Well, I honestly just don't think he can. I'm not sure if he can get like an ERA below 3, which I think he's going to need. And that's not a knock on him. It has more to do with his pitching style and just how he like relentlessly attacks the zone. There's some times where he just gets beat on sort of just luck based on contact. So he's always been a hard guy for me to see winning the Cy Young. So you're going to have Kershaw win the MVP but not win the Cy Young?
I'm just saying because you don't like to give you another answer for something instead of giving you the same person twice.
She's trying to be creative and original.
But don't you also want your prediction to be right?
By picking the most
unlikely scenario. Don't you want your prediction to have a chance of being correct?
No, because
you're pretty much tossing MVP. You can change it.
No, it's fine. Because no one's going to hold me to this time next year. So
I will try my hardest to hold.
Yep, and you still won't. It's fine.
Okay.
All right. I'll leave this one up to you guys. We have 12 minutes or so left. Do we try to go division by division in terms of playoff teams or just pennant, World Series?
I think we should just do divisions, no pennants, no World Series. People have to tune in next time for that.
Should we also include our two wild card teams, though?
Yeah.
All right.
I would have had preparation for this, guys.
I'm just spitballing here.
I know you are, all right?
As am I.
Okay, Mr. I created the script today.
even if you look at the script, though, it's like one tiny sentence at the bottom. I didn't have my picks.
let's start with the easiest one while we let our brains ruminate. NL West. Division winner. Okay, I'll start. The Dodgers are going to win this division.
I'm picking the Dodgers.
Yeah, I'm gonna go.
You don't want to throw in any interesting one there.
I very much considered the Giants.
They just don't have enough.
Yeah, I forgot that Casey McGee is supposed to replace Pablo. That's a horrible swap.
I hate it.
All right,
but I mean, with that being said, the Dodgers have found a way to kind of like screw themselves over at the end of the season. So, or in the beginning of the playoffs. So.
I'm going to retract my prediction, actually, because one of my friends listening at home is texting me. I'm going to go with the upstart San Diego Padres. And thank you to Dan Deutsch at home for texting me that. I appreciate it.
Really?
There's a 50-50 shot.
No, I don't know.
I think it's more like 10-90.
maybe 20-80, but...
You never know. Kemp could be, old school Kemp, and Will Myers could be that top prospect.
He'll just become faster and learn how to play center field.
All right, then you can do the player-by-player or position-by-position comparison between the Padres and the Dodgers, just like we did with the Yankees and the Mets the other day, and you tell me, you let that support your argument. But it's okay. Hey, you're trying to make it interesting. I asked you to make it interesting.
I will say they do have a great starting pitching staff. They do have that, at least. Their bullpen isn't what it used to be, of course, but that they've got that really going for them for sure. And who knows? Maybe they'll hit enough to make up for the fact that they can't field at, like, any position.
All right. And at least, can we all just agree it's the Nationals?
Yeah.
Who's your other argument?
I mean...
The Marlins?
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Marlins, I was just praising them, too.
It sort of depends how the Marlins come out of the gate. Maybe if the Mets do... make some moves, which they didn't do over the offseason, so it's very unlikely.
No, not the Mets.
I think the Nationals probably have this on lock, especially if Bryce Harper can live up to his potential for, like, the first time, they'll just cruise.
Now, the division that might be the toughest to predict in baseball is the NL Central. Very good chance that both wildcard teams come out of this division. I think they have the past... No, not the past few years, but at least one. Who do you have winning the NL Central?
Okay. I wish I could be circled back to here. I'm trying to make up my mind right now. Oh, man.
I'll go ahead and take the Pirates.
Okay.
Okay. The thing is, and I can't believe I'm saying this, is I just feel like the Cubs have a really good roster.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I think they're a team we maybe choose next season.
I know. It's like... It's just at the same time, though, I look at, like, the quality of everyone, of the other rosters. I think the Cardinals are not really where they'd like to be, and I think the Pirates pitching is not great. I mean, you have A.J. Burnett is still pitching for them, right?
So
I'm going to take the Cubs.
I only know this mainly well because I know someone in the farm system who is a pitcher, but they have good things coming from their farm system as well. So
who?
That's what Tyler Glasnow.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with the Cubbies also. I think.
What?
I think Joe Maddon.
This year, you think?
Yeah, I'm going. I think Chris Bryant comes in. He hits 25 homers. You picked Jorge Soler last week for one of your outfielders. I think he comes in, is in Rookie of the Year contention. Lester leads the rotation.
Arrieta is so underrated right now. Basically, he left the Orioles, and the Cubs were like, yeah, you can throw the pitches that you're actually good at. And now he's awesome.
Even Miguel Montero for them, just having like a solid 15-homer catcher who's a veteran guy, I think that'll make a big difference. And I think just having Joe Maddon come in, a guy who, has a fun culture, he's a guy who's won in tough situations before. I don't think a manager makes that much of a difference in terms of winning losses, but I think in terms of him being able to come in and just completely change the culture for all these young guys who haven't had any winning experience, I just think that can't be overstated in terms of its importance.
Because of that reason, because of all of this change that will be happening in 1 year, that's why I'm saying that this is a team with all the pieces, but maybe just for me, I feel like a team's not going to make that 180 that quickly season to season. I have them for next year, but not this year.
Right. I just think that we've seen the 180 in the past before. So I don't see it out of the question. I think another thing that's like always underrated is Joe Maddon's ability to manipulate defensive shifts and have a significant impact using that. I mean, the pitchers do a lot better, and of course they're just giving up less hits. So it's obviously a tough division, though. I also think like the Reds aren't super bad. I mean, I don't think they have a chance to contend, but they at least will have an effect on the other teams.
All right. Two wild card teams will obviously be a little different for all of us based on our predictions of the division. For me personally, I have the Cubs winning the Central. So I'm going to go with both wild card teams coming out of the Central. I'm going to go Pirates. And I think even though the Cardinals pitching has a lot of question marks, I just think that lineup, especially with Jason Hayward now, could be the best in baseball. I'm going Pirates and Cardinals. But I do think the Mets will contend.
So have two wild cards? I don't think two wild cards
have ever
come from.
You put the Mets above the Marlins.
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of strong pitching rotation.
And that would be what? What do they have that...
Who, the Mets?
Yeah.
I mean, I think Harvey at 50%, but, I mean, between him, Wheeler, who I think could make a jump, you know, Cologne, we touched on him before with Bartolo Colon. He's a guy who is going to give you innings. I think Noah Syndergaard and I want to say Rafael Montero, they're two young guys. They could come up. They have Nice. They have Dylan G. They have so much pitching depth that even if Harvey is the only stud, they don't have a horrible pitcher within that rotation.
Okay, fair enough.
And we forgot Jacob DeGrom, reigning rookie of the year.
Okay, yeah, so they do. I think though the rest of their roster construction is too poor right now, and that's why I said I think they really need a trade. I think the Michael Kadire signing was just a huge mistake. I don't think there's any other way to put it. So they're iffy. They're close. I think the Marlins are definitely closer. So,
well, that's why. Well, for me, I'm going to go ahead and just choose. Let's choose the Cardinals and the Marlins. Aren't going to be my wild card predictions.
Okay. Wow. I'm kind of surprised you guys. I'll take Giants as one of my wild cards.
We just didn't want to pick the Giants.
Yeah, of course you guys don't, because you hate the idea of the Giants having a chance in the postseason.
Exactly.
So I think my other pick is going to be the Cardinals. I think Pirates don't have enough pitching this year. They do have a lot of pitching prospects, but I mean, like, Jameson Taillon, I thought he was even, like, better than Gerrit Cole, and he still hasn't even made it to the majors. So I have major question marks about him. And, I mean, Glasnow, no offense, he's not even as good.
It's just, like, in my heart I want it to happen, so I'm going to say it.
It's not out of the realm of possibility. And I think the Marlins are close, but the Cardinals are just better, and they've got the experience.
All right, with 2 minutes left for the AL, we'll just name all our predictions, get them over with. East, I'm going to go with the Red Sox, as much as it kills me to say it. Central, I'm going Cleveland Indians. West, I'm going to go Angels. And then my two wild card teams are going to be the Seattle Mariners and the Toronto Blue Jays.
Okay. I've got Blue Jays in the East. I'm going to take White Sox in the Central. I'm not sure that, like, Detroit is good enough. But Detroit gets a wild card. I'll take Angels in the West, and then Mariners is the other wild card.
Oh, God. Okay. I'm going to choose the Red Sox for the East. Choose the Indians for the Central. And I'm going to choose the Mariners for the West. And my wild card predictions will be I'll take the Angels, and I will take, oh, this is so much pressure, the Tigers.
Okay. Right. Also, I'm going to take the Indians instead of the White Sox. My bad. Not ready yet.
All right. Last thing before we go. Over, under, do the Yankees finish below or above 500?
Under.
Under.
I'm taking even. I'm going exactly
500. Oh, okay. Okay.
81 and 81. Good luck on good luck with that.
That is all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to MLB Talk. Feel free to listen to our podcast online, and we will see you all next week.